Lost River, 1918, Chapter 1. The living are concerned with houses and clocks and fine dining, while the dead, unmoored, drink moonlight and shadows. Our story begins in the place where night becomes morning, when our mother, Ariel, was delivering a baby. She had ridden away into the twilight with a nervous young father and would return to us with a bundle of silence. I remember the way the expectant father stood on our porch with his hands in his pockets, his eyes as dark as winter. This was 1918, in West Virginia, on North Mountain, where the crooked Victorian we inherited from our father's Aunt Nora sat at the edge of a rippling wilderness. In this place, death moved in rivers and slept in caves. It rustled in meadows and orchards and climbed into the branches beyond the windows of the room where my sister Franny and I slept under heavy quilts. We were used to death and life moving around us. Our father Fergus was a mortician. We'd seen the stiff bodies of our neighbors in pine coffins laid out for viewing in our parlor. The bodies of men who worked in mines or their tired wives. Sometimes dead children appeared on our porch, victims of pneumonia, consumption, diphtheria, and Franny and I pulled back our bedroom curtains to examine them wrapped in their quilts or sheets. Our mother, Ariel, was a midwife. She visited the cabins in Darksville where life emerged. Our father tended death while our mother welcomed life. They had inherited these professions from their own parents on an island off the coast of North Carolina, where both branches of our family, the Van Beests and the Flynns, had resided for more than a century. Franny and I noticed that the living were frightened of the dead, and the dead watched the living from their unlit acres offstage. Our father said the dead wanted what gardens want and what seasons want. Franny and I did not understand what he meant by this. We had not lived long in West Virginia. The forest that crept up our mountain and extended in both directions around us was deep with trees we'd never seen. These were not the southern pines we'd known in North Carolina, or the weeping willows that dreamed beneath long green waterfalls of hair. They were not the cypress trees hunched over their own exposed roots, heavy with moss. They were not Cedar of Lebanon's, those ancient cathedrals with ladders to the sky. These trees were thick and twisted, with leaves so big that when they fell, we mistook them for animals. Their white bark glowed in the moonlight, and we had no proper name for them, though the Irish travelers called them clotho, after the Greek fate, who weaves the web of our lives when we are born. There were stories about these trees, how they connected the world of the living to the realm of the dead. Ghosts were known to sleep in their canopies, calling to one another like birds. Beyond the trees, on a nearby mountain top, was a bog, in which bodies had been discovered, perfectly preserved, their hair neatly combed, the fabric of their shirts intact, their hands still holding a locket or knife. There was a cave to the west of Lost River that was said to serve as a door between worlds, a place where ghosts gathered like fireflies. To live on North Mountain was to live where the dead appeared in places other than abandoned houses or cemeteries or dreams.